All right, let's see if this works. Thank you, ladies. Our next presenter is Anna Song. She is an assistant professor at UC Merced in Psychological Sciences. Anna?
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here and to share with you the results of a new study. I'd like to acknowledge my co-presenter, Pam Ling, at UCSF. And we'd also like to thank the support that we received at the University of California, San Francisco, from the Center of Tobacco Control Research and Education. Some of the colleagues are here, and also my colleagues at UC Merced for their helpful comments on this presentation. My co-presenter and I do not disclose any, have no financial disclosures, and we don't have any conflicts of interest to report as well. I don't need to convince most people in this room that tobacco use, smoking in general, is a critical public health concern, particularly when you look at the amount of smoking that is being done by adults in the United States. About 1 in 5, or 20%, of U.S. adults currently smoke. But a group that is generally overlooked, even though they are a group of high risk, are young adults, those who are age 18 to 25. They're of particular concern for two reasons. One, they smoke more than any other age group, okay, with a current prevalence rate of 23.9%. But in addition to them being smokers, or a more amount of young people smoking, they're also a critical age to focus on because, as my colleagues had mentioned, although people say they had their first cigarette in adolescence, much of the transition to becoming an established or addicted smoker happens in young adulthood. So it's absolutely critical for us to focus on young adults if we want to focus our interventions on getting people to not become addicted smokers. Another reason why young adults are an interesting group to focus on is the relationship of smoking and cessation in this group. Specifically, studies have shown that compared to older smokers, young adult smokers are more likely to quit. They're more likely to have intentions to quit. They're more likely to have to actually make quit attempts. They're also more likely to abstain from cigarette smoking for longer periods of time, ranging from 1 month to 6 months. In addition, research has shown that the health benefits associated with quitting before the age of 30 are incredibly significant. Richard Dahl, on his longitudinal study on British medical doctors, showed that those who quit smoking before the age of 30 are able to avoid most of the long-term health effects associated with smoking. So this basically underscores the importance of focusing on young adults in terms of tobacco control. But in looking at young adults and the smoking that's being done among young adults, it's important to also recognize that there are different patterns that are apparent in young adult smoking. Specifically, the prevalence of non-daily smoking, or what we also call intermittent smoking, is quite prevalent among the young adult population. If you look at current statistics, about 36.2% of young adults have smoked in the past 30 days. And when you compare that to the current smoking rate of 23.9% in this group, what this basically indicates to us is that smoking is not just an addicted, established pattern of use, that it's quite possible that there's initiation going on in this group, but also that there is a transitional or an experimental phase that might be going on, that and if you include those behaviors as well, smoking is a lot more prevalent than we think. And this is also validated by the statistic that 39% of young adults are non-daily smokers. So when you ask people, you know, are you a current smoker, we also ask, do you smoke some days or every days? 39% of them say they don't smoke every day, they smoke some days. And so when you think about non-daily smoking, really one of three things could happen, right? That in terms of long-term behaviors, you could quit, you know, and that's what we all hope for this population, or for any, you know, smoker. You could transition to becoming an addicted smoker, or you could feasibly sustain this pattern of non-daily smoking indefinitely. And McDermott and her colleagues have shown that after 7 years, about half of non-daily smokers actually quit smoking. Great, right? But a quarter of them actually progress to become addicted heavy smokers, and an additional quarter of them sustain non-daily smoking for 7 years. So what this suggests to us is that non-daily or intermittent smoking is an incredibly important pattern to be aware of and to study in depth. Now, among this rubric of non-daily smoking, a very common pattern or type of non-daily smoking is social smoking. Social smoking is generally thought of as limiting one's smoking to social situations. It's not only important to study social smoking because it's prevalent among young people, but it's also important, as the panel that preceded this panel had really strongly indicated, that the tobacco industry has really latched on to this idea of social smoking, particularly in their marketing strategies where they link social smoking with social activities, drinking alcohol, or the club scenes. And I have here two pictures here where brands of smoke, of cigarettes like Camel and Kool are prominently displayed and promoted at a lot of these club events. So to study social smoking, I mean, we need to also be aware of there's this behavior that we would like to intercede so that it doesn't develop into addicted smoking or actually to curb smoking, but also as a way of understanding the industry's tactics in capturing this market. Now, there have been a handful of studies that actually investigated social smoking, primarily because it's relatively new to recognize social smoking as a problem, not just in young adults, but just as a smoking behavior in general. Levinson and colleagues had studied college students who had smoked, and in that study, they had identified social smokers by asking them, are you a social smoker? Are you a smoker? And using this methodology, they had reported that 56% of the smokers in their college sample said that they were social smokers. So over half of them said they were social smokers. Moran and colleagues, again studying college students, identified social smokers by asking them, okay, do you mainly smoke with other people? If you consider social smoking being something that you do in a social setting, you should do it with other people. So in using this definition of social smoking, mainly smoking with other people, they found that social smokers actually had less intentions to quit and made fewer quit attempts. So they found an inverse relationship between social smoking and cessation indicators. And Gilpin and her colleagues studied young adults, which included non-college-age, college-attending young adults. It was a California representative sample of people between 18 and 25. And what they in this study, they identified social smokers as those who only smoked with other people. This is a more restrictive definition of social smoking, limiting smoking only to those to smoking with other smokers. And in this study, what they found was that social smokers, using this definition, were less likely to be addicted and were less likely to think that they were addicted. So if you take a step back and look at the bulk of literature on social smoking, there are two things that come to mind. One, the relationship between social smoking and cessation is somewhat complicated, right? On the one hand, social smokers tend to be less addicted and less likely to be to think that they were addicted, but they're not quitting. They have less intentions to quit, and they make fewer quit attempts. So it's a very complicated relationship in that sense. But the other thing to take note is that there are inconsistent ways of defining social smoking, right? So if you just look at these three definitions, I am a social smoker, I mainly smoke with others, or I only smoke with others, you basically have two sets of identifiers. One is a self-identification method of social smoking, just asking people, do you label yourself or do you identify being a social smoker? On the other hand, you can take a behavioral approach and look at the patterns of smoking, how they behave and what context they may be smoking. So mainly smoking with others and only smoking with other people would be a behavioral indicator of social smoking. And it's important to recognize the inconsistency or the differences in these definitions of social smoking because these inconsistencies may relate, may have an impact or be the reason why we see an inconsistent relationship in social smoking and cessation. So looking at this literature, our study basically had two aims. The first aim was to compare the frequency of social smoking across these three definitions of social smoking: self-identification, mainly smoking with others, and only smoking with others. And our second aim was to compare and look at the relationship between social smoking and actual cessation indicators, particularly intentions to quit and quit behaviors. Our data basically was comprised of a nationally representative sample of young adults. It was based on a cross-sectional survey of 1,528 young adults from a web-enabled panel maintained by the research group Knowledge Networks. Knowledge Networks recruits panel members using random digit dialing. In exchange for being a participant in internet surveys, these panel members are offered free internet service. So what you get is a nice representation of the United States population. In this study, participants were those participants ages 18 to 25, and it was pretty representative of national statistics on young adults. There were an equal number of men and women, a good range of ethnicities, at educational levels, including those not attending college. And the average income of this group was $25,000 to $35,000, what you would expect in this age group. In the study, we limited our analyses to those who currently smoke, the young adults who reported smoking over 100 cigarettes in their lifetime and report smoking every day or some days. In this sample of 1,528, 455 young adults met that criteria. To identify social smoking, again, we studied three definitions of social smoking. For our self-identification indicator of social smoking, we asked, are you a social smoker? And we coded responses to this question dichotomously. If they answered no, they were coded as zero. We considered those to be established smokers. And those who said yes were social smokers. For the behavioral indicators for social smoking, we asked, do you mainly smoke with others versus, you know, smoking alone or smoking equally alone and with others? Again, this variable was coded dichotomously. And the participants were also asked, do you only smoke with others? Again, this variable was coded dichotomously. Our outcome variables were intentions to quit, and intentionally quitting for a month or longer. So participants were asked the question, do you plan to quit in the next 6 months? If they said yes, they were coded as one. The participants were also asked, in the past year, have you intentionally quit for a month or longer? Again, it was dichotomously coded, and if they had intentionally quit for a month or longer, they were coded as one. So our results. This is a visual representation of what our smoking sample looks like. Here, the largest black circle basically represents our smoking sample of 455 young adults who reported smoking 100 cigarettes in their lifetime. Now, within the circle, you see representations of our social smokers. This large red circle comprises of all those young adult smokers who said that they were social smokers. And this comprises 54% of the smoking sample. In our study. The smaller green circle here represents those who reported mainly smoking with others. This still comprises 30% of the smoking sample in our study. And again, we have here 10% of our sample had reported only smoking with others. So here you see indications that it is a very restrictive sense of social smoking. Another thing to take away here is the amount of overlap that you see in these three definitions of social smoking. If you take a step back, you could basically say that 62% of this young adult smoking sample could be considered social smokers because 62% had either self-identified themselves as a social smoker or behave as a social smoker. And so what we're really interested in looking at is the basically, what is the influence of identifying yourself as a social smoker? So for subsequent analyses, we basically removed all those people who had behaved as social smokers from those who self-identified as social smokers. And the other thing to note is that 43% of the self-identifiers also behaved as a social smoker. Another way to interpret this statistic is that 57% of those who self-identify as a social smoker do not behave as a social smoker. They actually behave as an established smoker. So there's something about this label that may be putting these young adults at risk. And that's actually what we do find when we look at the relationship between social smoking and cessation. Those young adults who self-identify themselves as a social smoker are less likely to have intentions to quit. Okay, compared to established smokers. So the odds of having intentions to quit, within the next 6 months decreases by a factor of 0.83, and this is adjusted for controlling for gender, ethnicity, and education. Behavioral smokers, on the other hand, show the opposite relationship. Behavioral smokers, compared to all other smokers, are more likely to have intentions to quit. The odds ratio of having intentions to quit increases by a factor of 1.66 for those who are mainly smokes with others, social smokers, and increases by a factor of 2 for those who only smoke with others. So you see the opposite relationship, depending on how you define social smoking. This type of relationship carries over to actual quit attempts, abstaining from smoking for a month or longer. Those who self-identify as social smokers are less likely to quit for a month or longer. The odds ratio decreases by a factor of 0.5 for those who self-identify as social smokers compared to established smokers. And again, you see the opposite inverse relationship with behavioral smokers. Those who behave as social smokers are more likely to abstain from smoking for a month or longer. The odds ratios increase by a factor of 4.33 for those who mainly smoke with others, and 6.82 for those who only smoke with others. This is a very strong relationship between those who behaviorally, who are behavioral social smokers, right, compared to those who are self-identified social smokers. So what this basically indicates to us is that differences in the conceptualization of social smoking leads to different relationships with cessation indicators. And what this generally tells us is that social smokers represent challenges and opportunities in terms of cessation and intervention efforts, right? So that on the one hand, social smokers are a challenge. It seems that there's some cognitive dissonance going on with self-identified social smokers. They possibly know the risks associated with smoking. They know it's not good for you, yet they're continuing this behavior. So how do you mitigate those risks? How do you mitigate the risk that they're putting themselves by doing this behavior? By saying that they're not a smoker, by saying that they're a social smoker, so they are basically no longer candidates for cessation efforts. Okay. But on the other hand, behavioral smokers present an opportunity. This group represents a group of young adults who are primed for cessation efforts. They want to quit in the next 6 months. They've already engaged in quit behaviors. So they may be great candidates for more aggressive efforts for cessation intervention. So in terms of clinical impact, what we suggest is that screener questions, particularly aimed at young adults, need to include the concept of social smoking. It's not good enough just to ask young adults, are you a smoker? Because 62% of them are going to say no, right? So in asking and considering social smoking, we are suggesting that you cast a wider, more accurate net by discussing social smoking behaviors, self-identification of smoking, as well as behavioral indicators of smoking. And in terms of research, what we suggest is that research on social smoking include all three indices of social smoking, because there are definite empirical differences between those who self-identify as social smokers and those who actually behave as social smokers. And those differences have very significant theoretical and empirical implications for what we understand and know about young adult smokers. Thank you.